Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 23. This is text number 19.
Archirna Maharagni,
Archirna Maharagni,
Tatpatyanugatavanam,
Tatpatyanugatavanam,
Sukumarya Tadarhacha,
Sukumarya Tadarhacha,
Yatpadhyam Sparshanam Bhuva,
Yatpadhyam Sparshanam Bhuva.
Archi Nama,
Archi Nama,
of the name Archi,
of the name Archi,
Maharagni,
Maharagni,
the queen,
the queen,
Tatpatni,
Tatpatni,
the wife of Maharaj Prithu,
the wife of Maharaj Prithu,
Anugata,
Anugata,
who followed her husband,
who followed her husband,
Vanam,
Vanam,
in the forest,
in the forest,
Sukumari,
Sukumari,
very delicate body,
very delicate body,
Atatarha,
Atatarha,
did not deserve,
did not deserve,
Cha,
also,
also,
Yatpadhyam,
Yatpadhyam, by the touch of whose feet,
by the touch of whose feet,
Sparshanam,
Sparshanam,
touching,
touching,
Bhuva,
Bhuva,
on the earth. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki. The queen, the wife of Prithu Maharaj, whose name was Archi, followed her husband into the forest. Since she was a queen, her body was very delicate. Although she did not deserve to live in the forest, she voluntarily touched her lotus feet to the ground. Please repeat. The queen, the wife of Prithu Maharaj,
whose name was Archi,
followed her husband into the forest.
Since she was a queen,
her body was very delicate.
Although she did not deserve to live in the forest,
she voluntarily touched her lotus feet to the ground. Report. Because Prithu Maharaj's wife was the queen and also a daughter of a king, she never experienced walking on the ground, for queens used to never come out of the palace. They certainly never went to the forests and tolerated all the difficulties of living in the wilderness. In Vedic civilization, there are hundreds of similar examples of such renunciation on the parts of queens and dedication to the husband. The goddess of fortune, Mother Sita, followed her husband, Ramachandra, when he went to the forest. Lord Ramachandra went to the forest in compliance with the order of his father, Maharaj Dasharatha, but Mother Sita was not so ordered. Nonetheless, she voluntarily accepted the path of her husband. Similarly, Gandhari, the wife of King Dhritarashtra, who followed her husband into the forest, also followed her husband into the forest. Being the wives of great personalities like Prithu, Lord Ramachandra, and Dhritarashtra, these were ideal chaste women. Such queens also instructed the general people by showing them how to become a chaste wife and follow the husband in every stage of life. When the husband is king, she sits beside him as the queen, and when he goes to the forest, she also follows, despite having to tolerate all kinds of difficulties in living in the forest. Therefore it is said here, Atat Arha, that although she did not want to touch her feet to the ground, she nonetheless accepted all difficulties when she went to the forest with her husband. Om Jnanati Miram Dhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miritam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dina Taranam Archirnama Maharagni Tatpat Nyanugatavanam Sukumarya Tadarhaja Yat Padbhyam Sparshanam Bhuvam.
So, I'll begin with a story that perhaps you have heard already from my spiritual master, Hanumat Preshaka Swami. He tells this story often. There was once a brahmachari in the temple, and he had been doing devotional service regularly sincerely for perhaps a decade, maybe a little less, but many years he had been serving in the temple. Doing book distribution, deity worship, all kinds of different services in a very regulated and determined manner. But one fine day, he's standing in front of the deities, and he says, my dear Shishiradha Gopinath,
I know I should not be asking this. After so many years of doing devotional service, and after following the instructions of my spiritual master, I know I should be better than this. But I don't know what to say. I would like to get married. Please, can you find me a wife? And so, very soon thereafter, one very nice, well-to-do grihastha comes to the temple and brings with him his beautiful daughter. They see each other, they're attracted to each other. Very soon the marriage is arranged, and this brahmachari is now happily a grihastha. So they get married, and now he's nowhere to be seen in the temple. He's disappeared. All the devotees in the temple feel his maya, because every Sunday he shows up in his nice BMW and with a very stylish Rolex watch. And so people look, oh my god, look at what happens when you enter the well of grihastha life, andhukupam. This is what you can expect. But of course we don't know. Right? Perhaps by their process of being engaged in grihastha life, according to religious principles, they might have the Supreme Lord as their son, who might come back and in this way deliver both their parents and everyone there in the temple. This is, of course, a modernized version of the story of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. Kardama Muni has a similar situation. He's practically self-realized, right? He is self-realized. He knows who he is. He knows who Krishna is. He knows that his primary goal in life is devotional service to the Lord. In fact, he performs austerities for many, many years and has direct darshan of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And when Lord Vishnu appears, what does he ask him? Please, can I have a wife? Can I get married? So a devotee can come to Krishna and say, my dear Lord, I know what the ultimate goal of life is. I know the ultimate goal of life is your service. I know that the ultimate goal of life is to cultivate detachment. But just one more time, right? One more time, I want to experience this material world. And I promise it will be my last. After this, it's over. And Prabhupada describes in one purport in the third canto, in the story of Kardama Muni. He says, when a devotee comes to Krishna with this prayer, then the devotee should rest assured that Krishna will provide him with a princess who is just according to his desire. And a devotee girl should rest assured that Krishna will provide her with a boy who is just the boy that is suitable to her heart. He says very nicely in one purport then. And therefore, he should remain completely peaceful and go on rendering his devotional service, waiting for the Lord's mercy. So in other words, Krishna, he fulfills the desire of the devotee, and he says, okay, it's okay, you can pursue this. Right? But the last time, the last time, no more after this. After this life, you're coming back home, back to Bhagavad. One more time. Later on in the fourth canto, Srila Prabhupada describes again in one very nice purport. He describes the process of how this attachment takes place and how this relationship builds. He says that during the time of the wedding, a girl is very beautifully decorated with costly sari and lots of nice ornaments, all real, and she's looking very, very beautiful. And when she enters the arena, then she and her husband circumambulate the sacred fire 7 times. And then the bride and the bridegroom, they look into each other's eyes. And then they are attracted for life. Then the attraction is built for life at that point. After that point, then they can pursue the practice of dharma together. And this is what this verse is describing. That then the combination of a husband and wife can actually become very useful for the pursuit of dharma. They play very important roles in support of each other. When Maharaj Janaka, one of the ideal kings in the history of India. He gave his daughter Sita in marriage to Lord Ramachandra.
After the Swayamvara happened, Lord Ram broke the bow and she placed the garland.
Then there's one very nice verse in the Ramayana where he says, Esha Sita Mama Suta Saha Dharma Charitava. Esha Sita, this is Sita, Mama Suta, my daughter. Saha Dharma Charitava. Let her be one who walks upon the path of dharma with you. Saha dharma chari tava. Bhadram te, says, all auspiciousness to you. He's giving his blessings. And therefore, panim grihishva panina. Please now take her hand into yours. Panim grihishva panina. Take her hand into yours. In some North Indian marriage traditions, this verse, the father of the bride says this verse during the appropriate point of kanyadana, giving the daughter in marriage to the husband. So the point is here, saha dharma charitava, let her be someone who walks the path of dharma with you. And this is indeed the facility that the grihastha ashram provides, is a possibility of a husband and wife to pursue the dharmic path together, and in this way become successful at the end of their life. Both have a very important role to play for each other. It is a well-known fact that it is the duty of the husband to protect the wife. We see this again in the example of Lord Ramachandra. To what extent he goes to protect his wife. And Prabhupada is giving the example of how she follows in the footsteps of Lord Ramachandra. And Lord Ram says, look, you can't really tolerate the sufferings of the forest. Anyway, the promise is not for you. So why don't you just stay here? And wait for me, and I'll be back. And she says, look, you have taken a vow to protect me, but I have also taken a vow to follow you. So I have to follow my path of dharma just as much as you have to follow yours. And in any case, it is your duty to protect me, right? And you can do that, right? Yeah. So then, what is there to fear for me? You will protect me. And of course, we know that Lord Ramachandra did protect Sita Devi and went to great lengths he had to in order to protect her. And so, yes, the husband's role is there in the protection of the wife. But similarly, the wife has a role in protecting her husband. The protection works in both ways. We find in the story of Shurpanakha. Shurpanakha comes and she's ready to attack Sita. And so Lord Ramachandra, well, Lakshman actually, on his behalf, he does this duty of protecting her and jumps up between the two of them, slices off her nose and ears. But Sita Devi also plays a very important role in protecting Lord Ramachandra. How is that? Because what is Shurpanakha's whole problem? Shurpanakha shows up looking very beautiful, and here's Lord Ramachandra looking very handsome, very stout and strong. She's like, wow, a gentleman like you only deserves a lady like me? Why don't we join together? We can roam the forest of Dandakaranya together, enjoying all kinds of things. But Lord Ramachandra declines. Shubhana gets really upset. And who does she get upset at? Sita. By her very presence, Sita Devi is protecting Lord Ramachandra. He says, I have taken a vow, Eka Patni Vrata. I'll only have one wife, right, in my life. And so, regardless of what happens, I cannot accept you. Right? Please find someone else. In this case, my brother, Lakshman. But the point is, she's functioning in this role of protector. Right? This is natural. A man's intelligence is all over the place. The mind becomes attracted. This is the nature of a man's mind. But by the presence of the wife, the man can actually tread the narrow path of dharma properly. He knows, okay, my wife is there. Whatever desires I have in life, I can fulfill, but Krishna has given me the facility of this grihastha ashram. So the point is, this protection in grihastha life is mutual. One protects the other. It is said even that the practice of dharma cannot occur without the support of a wife or a husband. Basically, Srila Prabhupada describes so many different types of samskaras that we go through in life. These samskaras, he says, are reformatory processes that develop a person's consciousness and make it suitable for understanding spiritual life. They actually create the difference between human life and animal life. These samskaras create very, very deep impressions in the mind, which become very difficult to remove, and which help one to follow the path of dharma. Every single samskara, except for one, must be performed with a wife or with a husband. In other words, it must be done with a pair. Every single samskara, except, of course, the last one, antyeshti, the final samskara. And we'll come to a little bit of a controversial passage in a few verses where we find Archie even performing that last samskara with her husband. But the point is, every stage of life, from garbhadhana to the birth of a child, to the first grain ceremony, to the child's hair cutting ceremony, to the marriage ceremony, whatever samskaras that a person has to move through must be pursued together. This is because dharma is done in grihastha ashram, in grihastha life. There's basically two options for performing dharma. Either one becomes a grihastha and follows this path, or one heads towards the path of renunciation, from brahmacharya to sannyasa. And these are the only two options in terms of pursuing the path of dharma. This is what the shastras give us in terms of our social duties in society. Either we can pursue the path of grihastha life, or we can pursue the path of renunciation. One of the two. But in terms of societal duties, grihastha life is the one that provides society with its structure, with its necessary basis. Now, okay, so this is the case. Grihastha ashram can provide many nice facilities. There's a few verses later on in Bhagavatam in which the Bhagavatam is describing that the wife provides this facility to the husband, and the husband to this wife, to actually go back home, back to Godhead, by allowing this process of dharma to take place, if their grihastha life is in accordance with the principles of dharma. So this is the nature of grihastha ashram. Okay, it's pursued nicely. It can leave a very lead one gradually back home, back to Godhead. But in order to pursue it properly, one has to be ready to make the sacrifices that come with that ashrama. This is what gives that ashrama its power. An ashrama is a place of spiritual austerity, of tapasya. The basic principle, tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shuddhyet yasmam brahmasokhyam. This human form of life is meant for tapasya. This is something that is true in any ashrama, in any stage of life. It is not that, okay, this is the easy way. Go on enjoying and one day you go back to Godhead. No, the facility of grihastha life is provided, the comfort of grihastha life is provided, alongside the austerity that goes with it. Both these. Every ashrama has its accompanying austerities and its accompanying benefits. Just like sannyasa ashram. One of the wonderful things about sannyasa is that a sannyasi can walk away from any situation, regardless of what it is. A sannyasi is not committed or bound to respond to any situation or to deal with it. This is because a sannyasi is a civil dead man. In terms of society, he's dead already. Sannyasis will traditionally, not in our system, but traditionally they will perform their own final rites, their own antyeshti samskara. They'll build their funeral pyre, they'll perform all the rites for themselves before taking sannyasa. That I am now dead. In terms of society. Socially, I have no obligations whatsoever. Because what does it mean to be alive? It means to fulfill your obligations to every living entity. And for sannyasi, those obligations are finished. The only obligation is to the Supreme Lord. So a sannyasi has the privilege of walking away from any situation, not having to deal with it. It's such a wonderful image of a sannyasi coming, giving spiritual knowledge, and then departing. But at the same time, a sannyasi has nowhere to go to. This is the austerity of sannyasa life. That he may go anywhere he desires, but he has nowhere to go to. He has no home. He has no comfort. He has no place of residence. He has no possession. So along with that freedom come many, many austerities as well. In grihastha life, one has the comfort of going to the same home, to the same bed every day. It's a huge comfort. If you travel nonstop, my Guru Maharaj calculated that he was spending an average of 2.5 nights in one bed. 2.5 nights. That's a very difficult thing to do. Your whole system is messed up. Completely. It's very, very challenging. To know simply that you're going in the evening, every night, to the same home, to the same bed, with the same people. And then that soft side is there in grihastha life. There's someone to look after you. There's someone to look after you when you're sick or when you're ill, or so many different aspects. That's there. But then alongside that, grihastha ashram also has its obligations. Becoming a grihastha means taking wider responsibility in society. Now you're responsible. A brahmachari has very little responsibility. His responsibility is, I have to serve my spiritual master with one focused attention and perform whatever austerities may be necessary for that. But grihastha life means entering into a wider spectrum of responsibility, where you're responsible not just to one person, but to every member of society around you. A grihastha looks after someone who's not doing so well in the community. This is the duty of the grihastha. The sannyasi doesn't have to do this, the brahmachari doesn't have to do this, but the grihastha must do this. This is the calling out before taking a meal. This is one way that a grihastha expresses his or her responsibility towards wider society. And then taking the, doing the effort, the work that is required in order to carry out that responsibility. Of working hard, of supporting the family, of taking on the anxiety of raising children as devotees of the Lord. Grihastha life is full of all kinds of anxieties. Anxieties that are born of attachments, but nevertheless those anxieties are necessary if that dharma needs to be pursued. So here we find Queen Archie following in the footsteps of her husband. And one can say, well, you know, this is, it's always the girl, you know, she's forced to tag along with her husband and go through whatever her husband puts her through. No, it's not like that. It's not like that. Each one of these ladies made a very conscious decision, a choice. Like Prahlada Maharaj is saying, Sita Devi had no reason to go to the forest. There was nothing pushing her, no obligation whatsoever. In fact, Lakshmana's wife did not go to the forest. And but Sita Devi did. She made a very conscious choice. Lakshmana's wife, Sumitra's reasons were different. But nevertheless, she made a very conscious choice. Gandhari made a very conscious choice. Right? Archie made a very conscious choice. Because they took it as their austerity in grihastha life. That, okay, I'm going to pursue this path along with my husband. They were ready to take on that sacrifice. And the ultimate sacrifice of grihastha life is keeping one's sight ahead on the prospect of renunciation. In each ashrama, one should keep one's sight ahead as to what is coming. At the age of 25, Prabhupada said, one has to decide, this way or that way. A childhood is over. One has to keep in mind, okay, what is the future? What is the next step? And prepare oneself properly. As one enters grihastha life, the sights have always to be set on the next step. Okay, at one point, I have to renounce, and I have to give this up. Entering vanaprastha life, the sights have to be set on the next ashram. Every time, one has to look forward. Right? What is coming up ahead? And how can I prepare for this? In this way, family life can actually be very wonderful. It can be very nice. I'll give you the example again of my grandparents. The same ones I told you about last week. My grandfather, who left this world in a very nice way. They were married. My grandparents... this is on my mother's side. They're very, very nice relationship. A very, very wonderful relationship. She was 13 when she was married to him. He was 17. She was actually 12. And he was 16, something like that. She had her first child by the time she was 13 or 14. He was 17 years old. He was the eldest son in the family. So he's taking responsibility for all his brothers. He had many different brothers, my grandfather. And their relationship in life many times I had the opportunity to observe, was so close, so tight. Right? That understanding, the friendship that they had, was based on an understanding that went deeper than anything one can imagine. A couple times they visited the United States, they visited our family there. And my grandfather had to go back for the business. He would stay only like 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks. And we would convince my grandmother to stay a little bit extra. It was so difficult for her. Even 1 week, she'd be in constant anxiety. Is anyone feeding him properly? How was he doing? How is this? And that 1 week, we felt bad for keeping her. Because it would be for her, it would be so difficult, you know, going through that week. That same wife, who is, one could say, so attached to her husband, when his moment of death arrived, she came running into the room like everyone else. And I told her, please, the best thing you can do at this point is pray to the Lord. Right? This is the only thing that will protect him. And she turned around and she went straight into the temple room and sat down in front of the deities and began chanting, Rishinga prayers and Pranam prayers, every prayer she knew. Right? And while he was just outside the door, leaving his body, praying for his protection. And once he left his body, that same wife who had difficulty staying a week without her husband, she is now living a life of focused Krishna consciousness. She chants 64 rounds a day. Sometimes she can't finish, she does 50 at least. Completely given up her attachment to her surroundings. She's living there with the family, but setting a wonderful example of inspiration for all of us. So the point is, she too has pursued the path of renunciation in her own way. She accepted the pleasures of grihastha life. She also accepted the austerities of grihastha life. She walked the path of her husband, but once her husband is gone, where is that strength coming from? Right? She had no strength to live 1 week with the rest of her family without her husband. And now she has the strength to live practically independently and focus her mind completely on the Supreme Lord. The point is, this process works. When dharma is pursued properly, it makes a person stronger, not weaker. And allows one to progress successively on the path towards ultimate renunciation. All the while experiencing the good, the bad, the easy, the difficult, everything together. This example is provided here by Queen Archie. And she's a wonderful example. And the Bhagavatam is very wonderful in this way, that it always gives both sides of the story in its examples of grihastha life. This is not something you can say about all the scriptures of the world. In some scriptures, you would be, if you read the scripture, you'd wonder whether women even existed at that time. There's practically no mention. Bhagavatam makes a point of always talking about both sides. Again, to set an example. Everyone has to pursue their path of dharma. And everyone should accept the austerities that come along with it, like Maharaj was saying yesterday, the sacrifices that need to be performed as a result of it. This is what makes that ashrama glorious. That we should not be afraid, oh, I will have to do this. Oh, one day I will have to give up, I'll have to renounce this world. Or if things may get difficult in the course of my grihastha life. Yes, they will get difficult, but that austerity is part of our progress back home, back to Godhead. And we should accept that tapasya with determination and happiness. Right? Like Arjuna accepted his tapasya, and Archie accepted her tapasya, and Lord Ramachandra accepted his tapasya. Everyone got their reward, but that's because they accepted the tapasya that comes along with it. And it is that tapasya which provided them with the progress back to Godhead. So I'll pause there and ask for any questions or comments at this point.
Here in this pastime we see the Archie followed Prithala, but in the case when husband is not qualified, so up to what extent the wife supposed to follow the husband?
Yeah.
And when she can reject following?
Yeah. So this is also described. The question is, if the husband is not qualified, then at what stage can the wife reject following him? And we know this question is addressed in the case of any kind of protector or spiritual master. That day when we had the class about one should not become a father or a mother or a guru or a demigod or a husband or like that, unless one can liberate one's dependence from the path back to Godhead. So there are instances, and Prabhupada gave the example of the wives of Brahmanas in Krishna Lila, who disobeyed the instructions of their husbands, right, did not follow their path. Their path was sacrificial ceremonies in order to pursue their devotional service to Krishna. In the relationship of the husband and wife, it is, like I was saying, the responsibility is mutual to help each other progress in spiritual life. Right? And therefore, it is also the responsibility of the wife to attempt to try to help the husband in progressing his spiritual life, just as it is the responsibility of the husband to look after her spiritual life. And this is mutually beneficial, because this makes for a much more comfortable grihastha situation. And if each one is progressing relatively at a steady and simultaneous pace, and this is very fortunate. But in certain situations, in certain difficult or extreme situations, it may be the case that there's just no way to help the husband progress. Right? It's incurable. In that situation, then yes, the wife can pursue her spiritual life on her own. This is because ultimately we all fly our own plane. When it comes to going back to Godhead, yes, it is the duty of one person to protect the other, but we can't blame anyone else if we don't make it back to Godhead. Each one of us is individually and singly responsible for tracing our path back home back to Godhead. And therefore, we must do what's necessary in order to get there. So, this is a balancing act. Depends on the circumstance when we know, okay, how much... We have a very nice example of a devotee in Boise, Idaho. Her husband, she's a devotee, and she's raising her four children as wonderful devotees. She comes from a Western, an American family. And her husband is not a devotee. He's not practicing Krishna consciousness. But she's worked out her situation in such a way that she can practice her spiritual life very, very nicely. They move close to the temple, right? And her children are becoming very good devotees. And the husband is okay with it. Sometimes, you know, there's difficulty, of course. It's there, right? But she's taken it as her tapasya. Right? She's understood in her heart that this is the tapasya that Krishna has given me in order to pursue my grihastha ashram. Everyone's tapasya comes in different ways. Some people never have to struggle for money. Right? This is not a struggle in their life. But their tapasya will come a different way. My grandparents also had their tapasya, some very, very major tapasyas in their life. Even though one side of their life, their relationship, was picture perfect, right? But another side of their life, they had a lot of tapasya they had to go through. Where someone else, this side of life may be okay and the other side may be difficult. But there's no one in this world who can pursue any ashram without tapasya. And when we refuse to accept that tapasya, we become afraid of it, and then we cough out and we back down, say, I can't do this, it's too much, you know, no, I can't handle it. Then that's when we fall backward in our spiritual progress. So she's taken it upon, she's very, very determined, right? Very enthusiastic, sincere devotee, and she's advancing like anything, because she's understood, okay, this is my tapasya, it's not going to be easy, but I will pursue it. I'll pursue it. Okay, our time is up. Thank you all very much for your attention. Hare Krishna.